This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Welcome. Sean Dyche. It's the Sean Dyche Show.
It's the unveiling. It's the announcement.
Gravelly.
He loses a fifth game.
Not so much back on the grass as back on the gravel.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, the editor of myoldmansaid.com. Joining me to discuss the merits of the incoming new Aston Villa manager, Sean Dyche. Now he's been released.
Finally.
From purgatory at Burnley. Mr. Chris Bird, Mr. Phil Shaw, Mr. Dan Rogers from the Villa Underground in the house.
Hello.
Welcome.
Hello.
Hello, my Villa chums.
So that's why Christian Purslow organised that fan consultation group meeting. It was to give us the heads up that Sean Dyche was getting sacked, and they were lining him up to take over from Gerrard if he gets beat by Leicester, and then Dean Smith comes to Villa Park and turns us over.
It's the magic fifth defeat, isn't it? I mean, it's been a long time coming from my point of view. And it sets it all up, David. And listeners, just think, we'll have to beat Burnley twice. We'll send them down. Yeah. What a story.
Sean Dyche at Villa, sending Burnley down. No, this is not some parallel universe. We are just joking, of course.
Or are we?
You decide. We need something to talk about. Obviously, we're not going to go over the old ground of Spurs, which we did a match reaction. So we will blaze through the latest Villa news, the 3 points. Before touching on a few themes from the recent fan consultation group meeting with Christian Purslow, centred around what he said about the summer transfer window and expectations for this season, which we are well below. I mean, put a brave face on it. I'll tell you where we were aiming to be later on in the show. How are you, gents? How are you, Mr. Rogers? I hear you went to that Cadbury's World. Is it yesterday or today?
Yes, I had a lovely time.
Now diabetic and American.
Had my year's supply of chocolate intravenously injected.
I've seen old postcards from the 60s and 70s, and it looks kind of cool, like from a retro point of view. But is it like a Charlie and the Chocolate Factory setup, or, what's your verdict on it?
My verdict, it's full of small people, small annoying people. And it's an interesting afternoon out where you're taken through a magical mystery tour of how cocoa is beautifully and ethically harvested whilst always being conscious of the large churning mass of chocolate and profit around you. But apart from that, it's a lovely family day out, like Villa Park.
Which works in a very similar way.
It's probably cheaper than Villa Park will be next season.
Yeah, boo hiss. I'm winding up to my comments on that. Don't provoke the bed.
Right, are you gents all right?
Not bad at all, thank you.
Chris, didn't you have some remark about the ladies of Birmingham you wanted to pass on to everyone? Off air?
No.
Wasn't it similar to what that Newcastle chairman once said? Was it similar? No. I'm sure it was more polite. Oh, okay, I must have misheard.
You'll probably see all about it on that Twitter page anyway. They'll make an appearance.
The chaotic club nights.
Chaotic club nights. The flip side of my evening in Digbeth was the first time in a long time I saw a girl fall out of a car because she was throwing up out the window. That's never happened before. What a new experience for everyone involved, I think.
That's what you should do. You should be taking pictures.
Oh, and I will be. Don't
selling,
you worry.
Selling them to that Twitter site.
Just time lapse.
Moving on swiftly. Time for some news. Should we talk about the self-driving car stopped by San Francisco Police or the Villa news?
I mean... They're equally baffling at the moment, but...
I mean, if the San Francisco police didn't know of the existence of self-driving cars, that would be a bit of a bombshell.
That's got to be a head fuck, hasn't it? Excuse me, sir. Have you need some ID? Whoa.
Get out the car.
Get on the ground, motherfucker. Oh, my God.
I am the car. I can't get out the car. I am the car.
And Transformer.
It's me. It's Optimus Prime.
I'd like to see the reaction of the San Francisco police.
I want to watch a video of it, ideally.
When they pulled it over and there was no driver in there.
Is it a metaphor for our season?
Yeah. Rudderless.
Funny enough, they are actually called AVs.
Ooh.
Autonomous vehicles in the US. So there is a connection to Villa there.
Yeah. Autonomous villains. Yeah.
Autonomous villains.
Just work on autopilot or don't in our case.
That's why we need Deitch and SAP.
I can't wait.
Just because he'll bring fucking Vidra with him.
I'll have a whole list of Burnley players to bring.
We need greater physicality, a stronger kind of profile of player in that team.
Well, there's the height sorted. Just like man mountains.
We'll be able to get them cheap as well when they get relegated. So it's all good. I think we should have some Villa news.
Let's.
Right, we can talk about the on-the-pitch findings from the fan consultation group meeting in the main part of the show. Let's just quickly go through some of the other things. I put out a AstonVilla.wtf newsletter regarding the expansion of Villa Park and the rebuilding of the North Stand, which actually all checked out from what I said. Perslow pretty much confirmed it all and then added bits on mainly about how they're going to leverage, hopefully, it being a potential venue for the Euros bid, which I don't think there's much competition there, is there, for that Euros bid?
The other option, Russia.
Yeah, and they were
talking about leaving
UEFA
altogether. Because didn't he say that if they were to, say, have the tournament today, Villa Park wouldn't be able to host games, would it?
Yeah.
It doesn't fulfil certain criteria.
The thinking is they cannot not have Birmingham being the second city as one of the host cities. So it all falls in with the timing quite nicely. And from what he's been hearing from MPs across the political spectrum and, you know, all the local ones as well, there shouldn't be much resistance. And the whole Euros campaign thing means that you, I won't use the words that how he described these kind of people, but you know the kind of people we're talking about, the bureaucrats that kind of get in the way. They should be washed away if it's like a government Euros bid. So,
sorry, who said that? Perslow or Putin? No, was it expunged?
Perslow. So we will surf on that wave. The actual development around Witten Park, I mean, it's going to be the Witten station. I mean, they're looking to hopefully expand it, the station itself, you know, like double the platform length.
Double the platform, half the trains. What a mastermind.
That'll do. Get everyone queuing, but not putting them on anything.
And then, you know, essentially have this Villa Live Zone, which will have like a live music venue and all kinds of activities.
Check there's an atmosphere of Villa Park. Is anyone alive? It's a live zone.
From the station all the way to the stadium. So I think there'll be a few things being knocked down. But from what he says, it could be quite something beyond just expanding the capacity of the stadium.
It's certainly a part of Witten that needs to get knocked down, that little block, isn't it? The back of the sort
yeah,
of
you can't lose, really. It's
all,
not
worth
it's
keeping.
Not one of those building situations, is it, where people are going to be protesting about, oh, you know, this is going to bring down the aesthetics of the area, it's going to be an eyesore.
What like, about the heritage?
What about the heritage? It's like a no-lose situation.
Yeah, it's no area of outstanding natural beauty, is it?
But I mean, we're being harsh there, but no, it is true.
Well, the Witten end is, I think, you know, with Aston Park and the
that's
very nice.
That's but a great area.
It's lovely with the motorway through the middle of it. It really is nice.
That's the expressway going.
Yeah. There's a couple of phases. The first phase will be the North Stand and certain Trinity hospitality. And the second phase would probably more than likely be the introduction of safe standing in the lower Holt. And then
long overdue, really.
And you'll get even more bang for your buck then, Dan, won't you? Not only would you have to pay double money for your seat, you won't even get one anymore.
Why are you poking me, Chris, with the stick of the stick of increase? We haven't reached.
They are monitoring. They say the safe standing trials at the moment, but they will not be part of the North Stand new stand.
Shame, really, because Villa were in the conversation very early on, weren't they? And now
we were like the leaders, weren't we, at one point?
Well, the first ones to put our hands up and say we will trial it if requested. And then problem is we've had so many ownership changes, flirtations with liquidation and everything, that it went way, way down the priority list.
Yeah.
So
because Wolves have got it, haven't they? I saw.
Yeah.
Amongst
but anyway, ultimately, after 10 years and the first two phases, you should be looking at a 60,000 Villa Park, which would be hopefully with some new silverware in the trophy cabinet.
All the more reason to keep prices low with all those seats, eh?
Mm. It's like West Ham did. Slashed their prices, didn't they, when they went to the Olympic Stadium?
Well, that's because they don't have to bloody pay for the stadium. We are. Taxpayers' money, if you didn't get what we were saying there. Ticket prices, as everybody knows, they will be increasing next season. After an initial scare of social media thinking it was going to be 30%,
it's actually
going to be more.
Fucking wankers.
Unless they see the light, there's going to be a minimum of 10%. I don't know if I would be emboldened to say for most people, because there are quite a lot of concession changes and zonal changes. So you're going to lose, it's to make it simplified, but basically it's to gentrify the stadium. It's getting rid of all the cheap zones. And the problem is when you have those, in effect, three, it's like a three for some people. It'd be, if you're a concession already, whatever, you know, whether you're over 65, soon to be over 67, or under 21, under 18, under 14, whatever, you will get a cut in the concessions there. Then if you happen to be in a zone, which is going up a zone in terms of the price level, then you're going to incur that increase, and then 10% as well. And, you know, I'm privy to the figures, which because they are, let's say they're a working progress at the moment from the report we've seen. I'm not going to, it's a confidential report. I'm not going to say. But anyway, we kind of been a bit uneasy about this threefold, but nobody actually worked it out. I think a few fans have, but they don't know the real figures. With the real figures, I thought, let's just do a couple of examples. And it is literally, it's like, oh, shit. And Thursday, the fan consultation group actually sent a statement to the club to say, you might want to reconsider this, because threefold price increases do compound to quite a staggering percentage increase.
And potentially quite a staggering mass exodus of people who can't afford to go anymore.
Well, regardless of there being any increases.
Yeah, say goodbye to your waiting list, which they're oh so proud of at the moment.
And what a way to reward longevity and people who have
sat through absolute
turgid,
shite.
You know, but put their money in at the lowest ebbs of the club as well. And they need to think long and hard.
With that sort of stuff, I always refer back to Bayern Munich when they said, you know, you work out how much are you actually making on this? And wasn't it like they said, oh, well, if we do a price increase, we make about 3 million. What's 3 million in the grand scheme of a transfer or a wage structure? It's nothing.
It helps make up for the lack of prize money we're getting by finishing in the lower regions of the,
in the last, Premier League. Last one, I think the last podcast I attended, we all predict something in and around 9th or 10th finish. So for every result, and of course Dyche's imminent appointment, every place we lose, another 200% goes on season ticket renewals. Is what I
gotta pay this. They gotta pay the severance money somehow, haven't they?
We'll discuss this at another point to not distract from the Villa news, but it is a concern. So we'll see how the dice land on that one. But you know, from their point of view, it's Villa have considered good value across the Premier League, and then. And they actually do benchmark quite low when you have all the pricing put in a graph of all clubs.
Fair.
They're banking on that. They're emboldened by a 22,000-plus waiting list because, you know, obviously not all of those 22,000 will want a ticket if the prices go up, but they know it's not going to be zero now.
And isn't a lot of that list for corporates as well?
We don't know. I mean, let's not complicate it. But the, you know, if people drop off, they're confident that, you know, that 22,000 is going to cover the situation. I'm not too sure. It's easy jumping on a list just to have a place on the list. There's a difference between parting with £600-700 to actually get the ticket when called upon to do it. So we shall see. But all I know is if they go out with the rises as is, there's going to be some heavy duty.
Fury.
Artillery headlines with the percentages, put it that way. Meanwhile, obviously Villa weekend off. Archer and Davis have been doing all right. Both Keenan Davis and for Nottingham Forest and Cameron Archer for Preston have both started 14 games. Davis has scored 5 and Archer's got 7. Both doing well. Do you think they'll be in the squad next season? I think Archer's got a better chance.
I think Archer might be. I think they'll know that Davis has probably put a bit of value on top of him, and they can now would be, if you're going to get rid, now would be the time, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think if Forest get promoted, then I think they might get him in, because obviously they'll get money. Yeah. So, I mean, that's not... I mean, Davis in the Premier League, I think he's good enough to be in the, you know, a squad of 3 or 4 strikers.
And I'd agree with that, but I think we've sort of seen his development trajectory, a lot of injuries, but
let's not say anything too bad just in case the scouts are monitoring this podcast.
Yes.
very good player, very solid, dependable.
On his day he is, and he did shit out the Blues pretty well.
Never gets injured.
No.
Also, the 125th anniversary of Villa Park this weekend. It's a shame they didn't finish all this expansion for the 125th anniversary celebration.
Might be done by the 150th.
It's a bit of nostalgia, isn't it? And I think someone made a great point about the changes pre-1990, really, that we had, you know, you had a great Trinity Road stand, the Holt End was iconic, and all of the inverted commas improvements since have degraded the stadium, and in a very different way. I think it's not dissimilar to how you look at like an Old Trafford now. Old Trafford is not a great experience stadium or a great looking at stadium.
The away end there is one of the worst away ends.
But neither do we need to go.
It's big and imposing, but it's not. You know, the San Siro is the same. It's big, it's imposing, it's legendary, but it's a shithole.
But that's why the North Stand redevelopment is, you know, there's other things that wrapped around it that I think require some scrutiny, but the North Stand redevelopment is not before time, you know, and I'm not surprised they're looking at the Trinity because, you know, as relatively modern as it is, what it replaced in terms of the tradition and the grandeur, it's a bit plastic, isn't it? And a bit naff. I mean, we sat up there
There's basically zero architectural merit.
Oh, it's functional, isn't it? But it's not imposing. It's not awe-dropping. You know, even the approach along Trinity Road, it was all done a bit on the cheap for me.
Yeah, well, it was.
That was the Doug Ellis way.
Yep.
The fact that he ruined that stand and then had the one across named after him is a bit of irony there. But there's a bit of work to do before you can really say, you know, super stadium. I mean, it's still a good experience in terms of the Premier League. But I think from listening to Purslow talk about what the plans are and you know, this time we're actually up and running for a change, you could have a real Villa Park to be proud of.
Good. Because there's so much scope to do that, especially with the North Stand of the build, because the amount of space they've got to do it in, there's no reason why you can't do something really good at that end of the ground.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're losing. I mean, the fact that they were, you know, they've been losing summer concerts to bloody the Coventry Rico Arena or whatever over. I'm talking over the last, you know, few
quite a long
years
time.
And decades. You would have thought like a modern, great access stadium in Birmingham would get a lot of the, you know, the giants, you know, when the Stones roll through or whatever. I mean, they're, you know, they're still fucking going. But that kind of caliber of act.
Just to cover the middle of it. You should be the place in the middle of England.
Should literally be a guarantee that if somebody's touring, they're touring Villa Park. But the fact that hasn't really been the case, and you can count the big concerts on like almost like one hand and I'm talking over decades is kind of embarrassing, and it's a lost opportunity there. So they really need to get this one right to create an infrastructure for the surrounding area that's not just 19 days of income from Villa home games.
Well, and infrastructure is going to be the main thing, isn't it? That transport in and out of there is the obvious pinch point. But, you know, I was just thinking, as you were saying, I mean, and although it's been cancelled now, the Foo Fighters gig was an outlier, really. There was nothing else.
Yeah.
You know, and it's, again, it's with a bit of nostalgia that's, I think there was some, it's no surprise we're not appearing on, I know that the main semi-finals go to Wembley now, but I think the big clubs should be competing to get that back, really.
Yeah, I mean, Wembley have got an argument at the moment because, you know, you can't really knock on their door and go, right, let's get them back at Villa Park and Hillsborough, because they go, really?
And even, really? You know, even in the summer, you know, you've got England being taken on the road and they're going to the bloody Molyneux.
That's true.
Right, it's time for some Media Muppets. Right, Phil, what's in the Media Muppet trough this week?
Well, this week we're going subscription-based with the Athletics campaign to stop people tackling Spurs players after the unfortunate injury to Matt Doherty against Villa. One of their Tottenham writers, Charlie Eccleshare, which is a good name if you're going to be putting clickbait out, wrote a piece titled Doherty's Injury Felt Inevitable Rather Than Unfortunate. Tackles like that should be called out, not celebrated. He said his view was that Doherty's body position made him a sitting duck, and cash going in that hard was unnecessary and potentially dangerous. And he goes, this is not an attempt to call out or criticise the individuals in question. Really?
What?
I didn't know there's such a woke line in football journalists now.
Oh yeah, there certainly is, because they didn't only squeeze this article out of it, they also managed to get a whole podcast out of it where they brought in Mings' tackle on Kulusevski, which I got the pronunciation right this time, and it was a similar tackle. And of
course, hang on a minute, did Lucas Digne go off with a broken collarbone or whatever it was?
Well, it was suspected, wasn't it? Well, How did that happen?
Oh no! Well, I mean,
wasn't Spurs' fault, was it at all? Like just thin air.
Yeah, just thin air did that as well. Yeah, Eccleshare goes on further, going, a shift in the mindset of officials and the wider footballing community in England is needed to make injuries like Matt Doherty's feel unfortunate rather than inevitable. But the worst thing about it is the whole piece is them repeatedly calling Cash's tackle a bad tackle. If you actually watch it and not just stare at the freeze frames, Doherty miscontrols the ball, Cash puts it out, and then Doherty runs into the tackle. He'd ample time to avoid it or back out, but of course, like Cash, Doherty's a committed player, so he didn't. You know, he kept going. It is one of those things.
If you can't, this is like almost contrary to the opinion that, you know, what's happened to the game that used to allow tackles, and that's what the crowd loves, a bit of blood and thunder. It's ridiculous, this kind of line of thought, to chastise a player like Matty Cash with cash. It's, you know, it's 100% commitment, isn't it?
And most fans of most clubs, I think, respect that. When someone goes in hard and wins the ball, you know, he doesn't go in to injure the player. I don't think it's a reckless tackle.
Yeah, it's competitive.
It's competitive, and sometimes that happens. And especially, I was always taught as a kid, when you play, if you pull out of a tackle, that's when you get hurt. You know, when you leave a leg dangling or something, that's when you get smashed.
This whole idea of starting to cry about challenges and...
Oh, it's just it's another example. They're just gaslighting football fans on social media just to, you know, square off against one another. I mean, this is the same sort of media that is, you know, holds Roy Keane up on a pedestal for being honest and telling the truth on Sky Sports. I mean, do they need to rewind and look at some of Roy Keane's tackles and stamps and assaults on the pitch? I mean,
that the stuff with that whole Haaland
saga exactly.
was disgraceful.
I mean, if you want to see a bad tackle, that's a bad tackle. It's not Matty Cash.
Premeditated, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I'm going to go and end your career.
There was a clip on Twitter from Sky Sports where, you know, they're having a debrief from the Manchester City versus Atletico Madrid game, and there's a guy who writes for the Athletic again. I mean, obviously Athletic don't like tough tackling games or the dark arts or shithousery or whatever you want to call it, because he was crying that Atletico Madrid were a disgrace and he would prefer beautiful football over winning trophies, because obviously Atletico Madrid have been effective in how they approach the game because they've won a couple of La Ligas, not the Champions League as Sky Sports claimed they had in recent years, but they've won the Europa League in recent memory and a couple of La Ligas, and you know, to win the Spanish title in a two-horse race that is Barcelona versus Real Madrid is quite an achievement. And I'm sure the fans are not complaining about how they play, because you want to win trophies. This is what it's about. And this, you know, the Athletic journalist said, I'd rather have a team that plays beautiful football than wins trophies. And then he backtracked and said, oh, hopefully, well, you know, playing beautiful football would lead in the future to winning trophies. Well, it wouldn't. You can't take Manchester City on playing the same way as they do when they've got more money than any team out there. And because of the football authorities not making this game fair and for allowing sovereign states to buy clubs and basically pump them with as much money as possible, then you've got to do something within your means to try to even the playing field. And, you know, I have no problem with how Madrid approached that game at all.
And actually, I mean, having watched the second half of that game, you know, the incident at the end is obviously considered unsavoury, but you see it happen every now and then. But actually, for most of that second half, it was really competitive. And Madrid showed how to approach a team like Man City, was get in their face, and they were fucking aggressive, really aggressive. And that's going to spill over at times, but it's going to happen, isn't it? You can't, as you said, you can't go toe-to-toe with Man City and try and out tippy toe around the pitch playing pretty football. It's not going to happen. It's so naive.
Right, you've basically got to get in their face and fuck them up. As the
I remember that's what we said, you know, before that cup final a couple of seasons back. You know, Villa are not going to win that cup final by trying to out football them. They're going to have to go and smash a few.
I mean, we've seen Villa trying to out football Manchester City, and we end up trapped in our own 6-yard box. Passing it around in our own 6-yard box and Martinez kicking it out for a throw-in.
It was a corner, wasn't it?
Sorry, it was a corner, yeah. That's what happens when you try to play the beautiful game against Manchester City. It's just like hot takes from... Normally the words woke and snowflake are used by different kinds of people in conversations, but I'm going to use them to the Athletic writers in this case, because that ain't nothing, the Atletico Madrid and what they did, and compared to what we've seen in the past. Right, on to the 3 points. First point, Diego Maradona's shirt from that, it's infamous, isn't it? The 86 World Cup match against England, Hand of God, is going into auction, and it's expected to reach about £4 million. And ex-Villa player Steve Hodge is the man who's got it and who's selling it. But there's a plot twist, is there not?
Yes, there is. The plot twist is Diego's eldest daughter, Dalma, has said it's not the shirt that he scored the Hand of God goal in. With plenty of disdain, she says, that ex-England player thinks he's got my dad's second half shirt, but there's a confusion. He has the first half top. I wanted to explain that to people, so whoever wants to buy it knows the truth.
I think this is...
I've got the £4 million shirt. That's what it is.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the fact that he would have been wearing the second half shirt when he walked off the pitch and exchanged the shirt...
Yeah, I suppose only Hodge knows the truth. I mean,
unless Maradona's got some kind of tradition where as soon as the final whistle goes, he changes back into the first half shirt.
I mean, he was a bit wacky, so you wouldn't be surprised.
This one's all covered in powder.
Yeah.
Is that why it's worth £4 million?
Yeah. if you melt it all down, it's...
Yeah, 86 Mexican cut.
Yeah, it's like the before they started...
Vintage gear.
Cutting it down.
It's really pure. Attractive to dogs in airports.
Right, point number two. The Portuguese Football Federation want to test 60-minute football matches in an effort to combat time-wasting. Now, time-wasting is just literally what's been I've been watching more of at Villa Park than football in recent weeks and months. Even the Spurs were at it when they were 1-0 up in that first half.
Yeah.
So what's their plans?
Yeah, well, the plan is to have the game be 2 30-minute halves with the clock only ticking when the ball's in play. Now, of course, when this news broke, everybody's going, oh, don't change the game, stop changing the game. But if you look closely and do a bit of digging, this isn't as radical as it sounds, because a recent piece from The Analyst shows that the ball is only in play a maximum of 56 minutes of a game if you're Man City, compared to bottom of the table, Aston Villa, who only have the ball in play 48 minutes on average.
What?
40 minutes?
I don't know why I'm surprised by this news.
No, but I mean,
I wish I had this table when we were looking through the ticket price report.
50% reduction on this.
Yeah, we need a reduction. The ball's never in bloody play, for God's sake.
You know, if it's just like the clock stops as soon as the ball goes out of play, it would work. The only thing is, you run the risk of it turning into like an NFL game, and instead of 90 minutes, the game lasts 2 hours.
I don't mind them doing that in terms of stoppage time. Just do it like rugby. Just
hang on.
When a player goes down injured, clock off. It's so fucking easy.
Is there a risk we could be at Villa Park longer here? Is that what you're saying?
Good point.
Very much. And then a 5-minute VAR check actually turns into a 5 minutes at the end of the game instead of the 30 seconds or whatever suits them.
Yeah, we're definitely getting ripped off, because I most of the time we're watching Villa this season. Just use that as an example. It's just people getting frustrated because they're actually not watching any football. Whether it's a Watford player pretending to be injured 1 inch within the touchline, so it does actually stop the clock, or Spurs players trying to break up momentum of Villa when we were on fire for 5 minutes.
The common one this season's been where they don't. It's the stopping of the play and then them not avoiding the trainer coming onto the field so that then they don't have to go off. That's the one that really winds me up.
Yeah, but they've got to look at this because I've had enough.
The weird one, actually, with that, as you mentioned, it was
just do it for me.
There was a strange one. I think I'd mentioned it before. There was a little quirk that had come out just before we played Southampton. Now, it was actually the first time it hadn't happened, but apparently every game Southampton had a stoppage on 65 minutes.
Yes,
and the players were all running over to the bench when they had to get drinks and stuff in them. Villa, of course, by that point, they were 4-0 down, so I thought, well, what's the fucking point?
This is the problem with this game. It's got old rules. Basic rules, but there's so much technology and overthinking of the game. It's that it's kind of warping the actual game now and taking advantage of it. I mean, it's done that financially straight away, because when they started the Premier League, they didn't really think about things like wage caps and other devices to actually make it fair as a sporting contest. One of the things that Purslow was talking about was, you know, the fit and proper test. Basically said, what's your name? Have you been arrested? No. Got any money? Yeah, good. Club's yours.
Seen us all right to date, hasn't it?
But yeah, they're going to have a think about that, because people are taking advantage of this, the time-wasting situation, for sure. Point number three. Ticketless Celtic fan went to extreme lengths to sneak into enemy territory in a recent Old Firm game. It is pretty difficult to get tickets for the Old Firm matches.
It's difficult to get tickets for either of them anyway.
Especially for an away fan. They weren't letting them in for 2 or 3 seasons.
Yeah. So this Celtic fan couldn't get a ticket for the match, so he applied for a job in the food kiosk. So he had to show up for work at 9 a.m, then proceeded to hide in the toilets until the away fans arrived. And then, despite all the heightened security, obviously because of the Old Firm rivalry, he wasn't found. Joined in, and at the end of the game, was celebrating by posting on social media his employment contract and obviously pictures of him in the game. Played the long-term game there, didn't he?
Fair play to him, man. That's some ingenuity, isn't it?
I had been thinking of a way of penetrating Villa's away scheme, so...
Yeah, basically, you apply for 19 jobs all around the country at everybody else's stadium.
Huge demand for hospitality workers at the moment, everyone.
Yeah.
Surge in applications. See you at Leicester, everyone.
Have you any prior experience in this? Yes, well, if you look closely, I've had 18 other jobs this season in exactly the same position.
Yes, you just got to think outside your box when there's things like problems getting away tickets, etc. There's always a way. There's always a way. Right, so let's talk about something that came up in the fan consultation group, the summer transfer window, where we are. We've been, this season, we budgeted to be eighth. That's where they were expecting to finish. I think a similar position the season before. So we've been well down in that, and especially after this losing streak that we've just had now. Now, you know, a lot of fans will go, well, you know, what, it's only a few million here and there. I mean, if we finish 14th, we would be, I think, just over, based on the last season's prize money for league table finishes, we'd be over, a shade over 10 million worse off than what we budgeted for. Now, that might be a player, but drag it back. It's more its impact on the rest of the infrastructure of the club. You know, whether it's improving fan facilities, you've got a situation where the women's team costs per season under £1 million. The whole thing.
Mad.
One player's wages for a couple of months.
2 weeks of Coutinho.
So if suddenly you've lost, yeah, exactly. It's like, is lunch money or something. So if you've suddenly lost 10 million that you were budgeted in, that's where you're looking to, you know, that means the acceleration of buying the two or three, let's say, higher class women's players, probably not going to happen because of where the men have finished. Or, you know, it may affect the academy. And so it does have impact in that way, big time. But this is the problem now, is this is what we've probably been saying when we're, you know, when we're going after players, is where we're expecting to finish. And it's always top half, and it's, you know, the boy who cried wolf. So, in terms of Coutinho, is that, you know, if we finished 14th, 13th, is that going to be enough to, is he going to be looking elsewhere? Of course he is going to be casting an eye of, you know, what's potentially out there.
Ooh, Brighton.
That'd be a pathetic end to the season, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but it's compromising, not only financially, but also in scope of what you can do in the transfer market.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Okay. Now, talking about the transfer market, Purslow said it's not going to be like a wholesale change of what we did under Smith when we, you know, the first season or two that we were up in the Premier League. But it's not going to be a case of just one or two players. But the key word was recycling the squad. So it looks like a few out to pay for the to contribute to the ones coming in.
It's a really important transfer window, this
one is, yeah.
And it's one that, for all the reasons as you just said, I think that we have to now bring together probably upwards of three or four top quality players that lift you into that eighth position. I think eighth was ambitious on the signings that we got, to be honest. But
well, I would disagree with you, because I think if...
I wouldn't with 14.
Spending that amount of money, I think at the start of the season, most fans would have thought we've got a good chance here of
I think if you went down the two squad lists...
We were talking about Europe, so if you're saying, you know, finishing eighth or ninth, you would say, yeah, this there's enough here to get there.
I still think this should be on paper.
I think the bit for me it's the depth element that, you know, we're not talking about the top end of the division where they can field two teams of 11 that are top quality. We're in that balancing act, and we've got to acquire players that in the same market that many of our competitors are trying to do at the same time. And I think this is where I do think it's a good part of our gamble and where our investment should be. We want a crop of young academy players, or those players we've acquired into our academy, to be in and around the squad of the quality, you know, perhaps developing with those high quality players.
I would argue that a couple are, and Ramsey's broke through.
No, well, I agree.
Ramsey's probably ahead of schedule. Irogbenham's sort of looking like he's on track. Carney, no one quite knows where he sits. I think that Tommy O'Reilly lad's reasonably well thought of, isn't he? And there's a couple of others. And of course,
just to go back to what Perslow said, he said the starting lineup for the first game of next season will look decidedly different. So you would imagine, let's say, less a ballpark, I would say that's five players, four or five starters. I think will be in place.
Probably a new spine. But you keep your goalie, obviously. I don't think you're going to get better than what we've got. Probably looking at a centre-back, definitely a central midfielder, surely.
Two, I think. If you don't get two, then we're fucked.
And then if you count something like a permanent signing of, say, Coutinho in the attacking areas, there's your four.
But I'm not 100% he will stick around. If I'm in his shoes, I'm thinking, where am I in my career? Right, you would consider that I'm in my prime. You know,
age-wise.
And I want to still win things because, you know, in a few years' time, I'll be cast out to sea. So I'll be looking for best available offers. And if Villa aren't legitimately, I mean, Villa's aim is to be at this point in time, their aim, and realistically, and this is, you know, from the horse's mouth, is to be the best of the rest. So this is outside the top six.
Did he actually use the word recycle? Because that's a very interesting word. That's not... You know, get rid of
juggle, recycle. It's definitely players going out 100%. Gerrard's not impressed. I mean, you only have to look at the performances against, you know, Newcastle.
You have to watch his
rings a bell.
Watford
rings a bell. And Perslow said he's never worked with anybody as driven. And he said the next day after a loss, it's like hell on earth. He doesn't like losing and he's not used to it. And there's going to be a culture change at Villa. Well, there already is.
There are some obvious candidates, aren't there?
Oh, yeah.
Well, there's guys out of contract. There's guys who haven't been getting a sniff anyway, have they? So, you know, your target's easy one out the door and you'll probably make profit on him, El Ghazi.
Fucking Louise.
Louise will be the one you'd actually make some good money on, you'd like to think.
I would be surprised if Louise is still around.
But there's other guys in the squad we've sort of used the word like potential upside. People like Buendia or even like someone like McGinn. You can get the best out of these guys and they look like good people, good personalities to have around. And they'll continue to buy into what they're trying to achieve and they'll work towards it. And if they don't quite make the cut, you know it won't be for want of trying. Louise, you sort of look at him and go, you've got all the tools to be a top player, but you just haven't got it between your ears. And if I think, you know, he's been here long enough now that if he was going to be a consistently top-level player, he would have showed he was going to be by now.
He'd still be at City.
Or, to be honest, if he was at that level.
Well, Manchester City aren't stupid, are they? I mean, they're obviously not going to shout from the, you know, from the top of the Etihad.
And when you watch Fernandinho consistently.
Oh, he's really shit. Can somebody take him off our hands? They're not going to say that, are they? They're going to say, oh, yeah, we want to keep him, but can't get the work permit. Yeah, we might buy him back.
I don't know where he'd
go,
though. Surely you'd think he'd have to go abroad. You couldn't see anybody in the Premier League touching.
He's a perfect player for the Spanish League or even Italian League. I mean, probably Spanish League would probably suit him better. And he's been on loan there.
I'm not sure he's always been...
And the team got relegated.
Oh, yes, they did.
He's very Arsenal. Or he's very old school Arsenal, isn't he? Not when the Arsenal were weak. He would fit into that sort of Arsenal. Oh, yeah, he looks like a
technically
good
gifted, but no bollocks.
Exactly, or maybe Spurs.
Anyway, so we've sold him.
I think he'll go to someone like a Fulham. Go and live the lifestyle in West London. Go and live the influencer life.
He'd probably
in
love that, actually.
He'd love it, wouldn't he? Spend all day in Harrods.
But, you know, Fulham would need a bit more, I think, to stay up.
They've probably got more already.
Anyway, who else? We've kicked him enough.
El Ghazi, you think will go?
Those are easy ones. What about the centre-backs? What's going on there?
I think there'll be one with a question mark.
like, what's going on there? What about those centre-backs? What's going on there?
They've just signed Chambers, so he won't be going anywhere just yet, and he's done reasonably well recently. Cahors just signed a new deal, didn't he? And they like him as a backup, so...
It wasn't so long ago that the social media and local... mentioning no names, some local press chaps were saying, jumping on the bandwagon of social media and saying, sacrilege, Southgate should have Konsa in the England team. And I was like, no, he's got to prove it. He's got to do more.
And do more consistently.
And he's been found out this season that he is not ready to be England's star Rolls-Royce centre-back at all.
Which says a lot, doesn't it, when you look at the levels of consistency this year from people like Maguire. I mean, I think Stones has become a very good player, actually.
Yeah, now's a good chance to be an England centre-back, actually.
Because we're not exactly gifted. There's not much depth there.
Yeah. I think Mings... It's quite interesting that Gerrard publicly had that conversation about the
captain position,
and needing leaders. I mean, we've been there before with the whole "we need leaders." That was our mantra in the Championship, and so we just went around buying every Championship team's captain.
It got us out of the league eventually, didn't it?
But, not caring what position they played or if they would work together.
Maybe, I don't know. Can you play centre back? Yeah, why not?
McCormack, tick.
Exactly. We want captains in every position.
Elphick, tick.
Injured. And I think, and ultimately, of course, we're going to have to go and buy a backup goalkeeper because there'll be a few guys who are out of contract.
Yeah, but we're talking four or five. Let's stick
That's
to the
like
important
your upgrade,
things. So where's that? I think the midfield, I think it's definitely got to be two. There's no way he's going into next season without two new midfielders.
Unless you can get one who's starters. Very good. And he thinks, I can get the best, depending on the shape he wants.
You're getting rid of Louise and you're getting somebody else in there as well. I can't see him.
You could maybe play someone with Nakamba. It depends what system ultimately he wants
to play. I don't think he wants to start.
I think you're just treading water, keeping that same midfield. I think you two straight in. If that means treading on Nakamba's, McGinn's head, Louise's head, so be it. Because that midfield's just not going to get us anywhere. It's not going to get us where we want to be.
I think it shows, and this is no slight on Nakamba, I think it shows how we really are short in that part of the pitch, that there's a clamour to get him back into the team. We really have, in a weird... It's so strange because his form, his early form under Gerrard before he got injured was very good. You know, you can't knock it, but...
But he is, it's just a functional player, though, ultimately. But, he doesn't offer anything in the opposition side.
Yeah, and that was sort of where I was heading, that are we going to be a 5 or 6 out of 10 Premier League club, or are we going to kick on? And I don't know who that player is, by the way.
It's not an obvious one.
A lot was made of Bissouma.
I think it might be a diamond in the rough who we don't know about.
But you'd hope there's such things as footballers out there who get paid these ridiculous amounts of money, who are good at tackling and so can play a more defensive midfield, but also they can shoot as well and they can drive with the ball. It's not too much to ask, is it, to pay somebody 100 grand a week to be able to do that since they class themselves as a footballer?
Maybe he had a dead ball as well.
This is what I can't understand. The kind of shit that you get for the amount of money they're getting wages, it just blows my mind. I mean, I have to say this. I have to bury my head in the sand most of the time just to do these podcasts and actually turn up at Villa Park.
Whenever you say
that. But the truth be told, I am amazed what these footballers do get away with.
I sort of knew that whenever you said instead of treading on the toes of these players, you were treading on the heads of them again and all that bit.
David's a pretty tall guy, to be honest, so he can.
But let's not mince around. You would consider, just look at the league table now. West Ham are the best of the rest at the moment, and I think their two midfielders are, leagues above.
They're not in the top four, but they've actually probably got one of. If it's only my opinion, I think they've actually got probably one of the top two or three midfielders in the whole league.
And they are best of the rest at the moment, and that's what Villa are aiming for. So that just shows you what kind of caliber player you have just to get there.
Well, you're looking for an established international player, which anybody who's playing for a half-decent side is going to want to be playing probably Champions League or European football.
Because, the Coutinho thing's like, it's kind of a bit of stunt casting. I think it works in terms of getting Villa somewhere. If Villa have got a good team
around him,
that, let's say we've got it all together and we're very happy with our 8 out of 10 team, and then you get Coutinho in and he's that bit extra that...
He's your glitter, isn't he?
I'm talking about aspiration. So if we are the best of the rest and then you get Coutinho in, that might be the player that gets you, whether it's top four, but at least, top six, that allows you to break in. What his role is at the moment, I have no idea. It's more a commercial role, really, to get bums on
That's
seats.
That's the opportunism bit that he was available. Gerrard's the manager, and I don't think they'd have thought necessarily our season would have gone, to this point. I don't think they expected to be on such a poor run, but they're trying to rehabilitate him as they're rehabilitating us, aren't they? And he's very, as you said, very marketable. And there is some magic in there. I think that a lot hinges on whether he wants to be on that journey, doesn't he? As you say, he's coming in at a time when we're not necessarily equipped to use him to his best effect, and that perhaps you know, thinking of some of the away games particularly, that he's not necessarily in the form that we might remember.
With that said, if the decision is Villa's and you've got X amount of money and it's either a super solid midfielder or Coutinho, you know, which one are you going for? I would go with the midfielder.
I think because the simple fact that you've got Buendia.
Yeah.
Yeah, that does complicate things. The thing about the Coutinho, and it's really surprised me, is that he's so technically good at times that you wonder if we did have a couple of transfer windows to, and this is sacrificing Buendia to some degree, I think, if we had a couple of transfer windows where you could put a two top quality midfielders around a player like him, keep him fit, keep him interested, and he's the main man, I think you've perhaps, because you can't just go out and buy a Coutinho, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
But there's no guarantees that he performs to the level that we would hope necessarily.
Yeah. I don't think he's the type of player with a big enough personality to carry the team. You know, for example, Grealish managed to, but.
But there's some good things about that as well, that he seems, again, this is based on bits and pieces that I've seen, very humble. Doesn't appear to crave the limelight in a negative PR, you know, so he seems very safe there. But I do think that you perhaps need and I don't want to make the point for you, you may need bigger personalities around him. And that's what lifts a team. That's what lifted the big Man United teams. That's what lifts a big Liverpool team. And that's the, you know.
Yeah.
Exactly what you're talking about is the two midfielders I'm thinking about. I want their profiles to be those kind of players. Because at the moment, there's nobody really with the responsibility of our midfield.
Well, we've said it a few times. It's that, who's that guy when the chips are down who's going to grab a game by the scruff of the neck? On paper, you think it should be McGinn, because that's what he does for Scotland. But whether it's his role or whatever it is, I don't know. You see it in moments where Ramsey sort of, you go, give me the ball, I'm going to carry it, and that's great. And you think, if he can keep his improvement going, he'll become a good player for us. But you need someone who's like your Declan Rice for West Ham and those kind of players who just run the game for you. They dictate your tempo.
And the defensive side of it is as important.
Yeah, physical like profile, an aerial profile, because we're a very short team.
And they can read the game as well. I mean, can McGinn read a game?
And someone who's probably tactically switched on enough to know who can manage the game on the field for Gerrard. That guy who runs the game for you, who dictates your patterns of play, rather than Gerrard barking orders from the touchline when the players can't understand him.
McGinn's a good example of the kind of player who is arguably most at risk of a team that wants to transcend into the top part of the division. And this is a real surprise for me, that I thought that McGinn would be I was just describing how I'd hope for Coutinho to be a player who accompanies us on a journey. McGinn's been one of the, you know, for all of the good things he's done in the time he's been at the club, in recent weeks, the amount of misplaced passes at key moments, and I know he's been playing slightly out of position and whatnot, but he's one of the players where if he's got to move into that level of super high consistency. And again, you wonder whether there was a top midfielder in that sort of triangle of players, does he perform better? You know, as we see for, you know, his stats for Scotland. Night and day compared to Villa, really.
Yeah.
So how do you get that out of him? And that, because I do see that in McGinn. I do think we could see that in McGinn, but how long do we...
You've got to let him loose further forward, haven't you? I think you've got to sort of unshackle him a little
bit. Or is he at risk of being seen as replaceable if we're playing a particular formation or a style of football? This is why I think these next couple of transfer windows are really, really tricky, because if there's opportunism purchases available, I don't get the impression that Perslow in any way is sentimental about who's in the starting 11, in the squad, sorry.
Yeah. No, McGinn's a strange one, because whenever you say he's like playing slightly out of position, I mean, there's like a voice in the back of my head going, it's not as if he's playing nets, he's not playing up front, he's still playing in midfield, so he should be able to put in competent performances and not just kick the ball wildly out. I mean, everybody likes McGinn, they want to see the best out of him, but I don't
think... He's probably our most popular player, isn't he, really?
I don't think the slightly out of position should affect his game as much as it does.
I think if McGinn's playing badly, I think we play badly as well.
Yeah.
I think that's the kind of drive player perhaps we were talking about.
Somebody in a previous podcast mentioned Henderson, and that is a profile of player that probably we could do one of those two midfielders that I'm you know, thinking about.
Just a real steady Eddie who just keeps everything ticking over.
Yeah, nothing like Flash, but steady Eddie who's in the right place at the right time and keeps, you know, keeps things ticking over.
A real talker as well, Henderson.
He is. He's a great captain. He's grown into that role.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Villa did have a habit, Bamises, back in the day of acquiring players. Like Richardson sticks in my head, that
Richardson,
kind of player.
Richardson, Townsend.
You know, you know, those are the kind of personalities,
even like Gareth
Barry,
to be fair.
But, you know, when you look at the Villa midfield that won the league, I mean, you've got Des Bremner, Mortimer and Cowans, and it's a unit.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they're playing as a three together. We don't look at our midfield as a unit.
No.
Even like the... Like when I sort of started,
McGinn kind of does his own thing in my book.
Yeah, well, we call him a weapon, don't we? You pull the pin, throw him at the opposition, and hope for destruction. It is pretty much, he's a blunt instrument.
Ramsey isn't really in sync in the unit when it comes to the defensive side of the game.
Not yet.
The midfield does not really defend as a unit. I mean, the amount of goals we've conceded where our last gasp tackle is in the opponent's half and we're suddenly at the opposition's at the races and counterers, and there's just, you know, a couple of centre-backs there for them to deal with. We're not defending as a disciplined unit.
He's got a lot of questions to answer, both personnel-wise and sort of tactically, because we said on the previous show, regardless of the personnel, has he been getting the best out of what he's got? And I think it's a hard no from me. Yeah. Should the side we've got have been performing better? Yes.
So Grealish, 100 million in, and people, you know, still people I see on social media going, oh, we're going to spend the 100 million. It's like, well, the fact that Perslow put out that statement, well, it was live, wasn't it, last summer?
Yeah.
Where he said, we are replacing Jack Grealish in the aggregate with three players. Basically saying that 100 million paid for Buendia, Ings and Bailey. Now, I got the maths calculator out, and have we got value for them? You know, we paid around 90 million for those three players, and that was going to give us the depth to actually be a proper team to have a stab at being the best of the rest. Ings and Buendia have played, of the total minutes that Aston Villa have played in the Premier League this season, they've played 57%.
And to me, that sounds quite generous. It doesn't feel like they've been involved.
We need that Portuguese 60-minute rule to come in.
It's way below that you want, but it actually sounds generous from the impact they've actually had.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Bailey, he's played 22%. Of all the minutes that Villa have played in the Premier League so far, which is just, for 30 million, it's a joke.
His first 2% were the best.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, exactly.
Was it a 20-minute cameo against Everton and then done?
Yeah, and that's it. Now, if you've just spent 90 million on what should transform your team, you're giving it, you're replacing Grealish, I think, on the upside with those three players. It's like, and it should improve the team because suddenly you're not reliant on one player. And by the way, he's played 55% of the total minutes in the Premier League that Manchester City have played. So he's kind of doing what he did with us to a certain extent. You should be really kicking on. And of course, they've all been injured or whatever, but that all plays into it. Now, this is an interesting question because, you know, personally, we're still bullish on Johan Lang and talking about him and Lang as a good team, but the jury is very much out at the moment. But you know, we've said this before, all these signings have looked good on paper when they've come in, and you know, people have been enthused about them, and with good reason. Those three players we mentioned there, Bailey, potentially a little bit of uncertainty about him. I mean, some good show reels, you know, good goals against Bayern Munich, all that kind of shit. But Ings and Buendia, you know, thumbs up when they came in. So, you know, you can't really blame Lang if he's getting in players that actually legitimately you're happy to have and they don't perform. That's not on him. But when you look at the profile of that team and it's lacking physicality, I mean, you saw that against Spurs when we were just being beaten to every second ball and pushed off the ball, you know, sometimes in the 50-50s. There's definitely a lack of physical presence in the team. So you could put that on Lang's table. But he has to come under the microscope, but it's a whole thing, isn't it? It's management.
It's collective.
It's a real collective issue that, but the bottom line is when you boil it down, the owners are like, right, where did you budget for this season? Ah, right, we didn't finish there. Oh, where did you budget for last season? Ah, okay, and we didn't finish there. It suddenly becomes a narrative of not continuous improvement, it's continuous failure.
Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun.
And this is, of course, where Perslow's, you know, he'll be managed against that because the book stops with him ultimately. And I'm intrigued to see what happens, because without the continuous improvement is, you know, will come an increasing ruthlessness, as we saw earlier in the season with Smith. Because, well, we stand to see, I mean, this transfer window, I mean, the fees and wages are astronomical in football now. And if against a backdrop of bringing the infrastructure of the club into the 21st century of the next 12, 18 months, we're talking serious investment. We Perslow and his team are going to have to start delivering for the owners. Ultimately, aren't they? Because questions will be asked. And
also, you know, you have to fill a new stadium somehow. And it needs to be, you know, you need to have that narrative of continuous improvement and achievements
on the pitch. You know,
whether that's a good cup run or getting in that top eight or so, it needs to happen, or else that waiting list is going to disappear. You can't hike up the prices in these economic times and not expect there to be a backlash. And people, you know, obviously they're so dedicated to Villa that they'll it's and for some people it's their priority, and that's where they'll put their money, rather, you know, they'll be wearing an extra jumper in terms of heat in their homes. But if you start to give them an excuses to go, yeah, you know what, I can't really afford this season ticket after all.
I just wondered, going back to that Everton game, that was sort of like the peak of, we thought, right, Jared's got these boys doing exactly what he wants, and now he's got 2 weeks with them to really hammer that in. I think, like, it's almost like a switch flicked. It's like Jared was, you know, he's getting the best out of the players he had, and in sort of not a very different formation than Smith was playing, just a bit tighter than Smith was playing. Then he had those 2 weeks and he goes, right, now we're going to play my way. And it's just like, he's just looked at him. He's almost like treated the second half of the season as an experiment to see which players can play his way. And it's you can just see the way it's going. It's like ups
kind
and downs.
I kind of agree with that. But I think if you're going to experiment at the moment, because you kind of knew once we'd won those three games, you're not going to be in trouble below you. But it isn't like we've seen wholesale changes, or you kind of turn up to Villa Park and think, God, I don't even know what system they're going to play today. At least if they were doing that, and getting beaten by Arsenal, getting pumped by Spurs, etc., you kind of go, all right, well, I can see there's clearly experimentation. You know, I don't think there'd be any fan at the moment, for example, who'd say, well, all the guys who've played CDM haven't worked, he's going to give Irogbenham a start. All right, fair enough. He's earned the right to have a game. Or, oh, he's going to play three up front, or he's going to play a back three and wing backs, or whatever it is, his tweaks. At least if he's very visibly trying stuff, then you kind of give him a bit of a hall pass. But when essentially it's the same system, similar players and the same errors, you kind of go, what are you learning here? Are you just trying to reinforce that this guy's not good enough and he's not good enough and that's why? It kind of seems a bit like you don't want to get to, well, July, but you certainly don't want to get to August and have wasted this sort of second half of the season, which for me, there's a bit of that creeping in. We think we're not really learning anything we didn't already know in January here.
We are making some of the same mistakes, certainly, and there's sort of a you know, if you think of like
same mistakes we were making under Smith as well. Some
of our players are, you know, we've got some quality in certain areas, and as we've discussed, really, there are some glaring shortcomings. Squad depth for me is one of the glaring things. I think that the thing that's been a bit bizarre to me has been that at times I think Gerard could rightly point to some subpar individual performances in the games, particularly the last four.
Yeah,
you know, weird things like. You create, was it 15 chances against Spurs, and some of them were clear cut, and you miss them. Up against some really bizarre repeated tactical blunders, you know.
Yeah.
And then you got stuff like the weird thing against Arsenal, where you get this post match comment that some people don't buy into the vision, or some. I'm paraphrasing, but I'm sure you recall.
Yeah, and well, he basically said, like, you know, there's some players that if they're not going to do it, they won't be here next year. Which
and,
is
well, and
for some
and that
players
was,
they'll know it's them.
Well, that was going to be my last point. Clearly, I am a bit, you know, where are we now? Mid to late April. Some of those players have to know. Particularly, they're either talking to their agents saying, "Get me out of here." You know, if you're lower squad players, some of the youngsters potentially, or you've been told you're going.
Hence why Perslow says to a fan consultation group there's going to be rejuggling.
Which there was always going to be anyway, but this probably ended up will end up being more than they would have liked.
It's not just putting the final pieces to a squad we've been building over the last 3 years. And I think it's all down to, A, the physicality of some of the players and just the attitude. I mean, you look at that Liverpool game against Manchester City, FA Cup semi-final. They were 2-0 up just by doing like what Wimbledon, the crazy gang, would do. First goal from a corner, wasn't it? Direct header.
Yep.
And the big physical presence, douche. And then the second one was just fucking hassling the goalkeeper. I was waiting for them to start saying, oh, this is a vintage Liverpool team. And you're just thinking, well, Wimbledon could have done that yesteryear in like the 80s. But that's something we don't really have. We don't. Liverpool
and City are actually the two best. They're the best examples of teams that when they haven't got the ball, you look at their work rate off the ball. And their desire to get it back quickly.
I would say Liverpool, they've got that over Manchester City in terms of the... I mean, this wasn't in the FA Cup, it wasn't the number one Manchester City team. I mean, they obviously made five changes. So, but Liverpool, I remember a couple of seasons back when they were just literally camped out, just putting in those diagonal balls. It wasn't like they were doing anything fancy against us. It was when we were 1-0 up and they scored two late goals.
They were just so fucking functional, weren't they?
They were basically, very functional. Just putting in balls from the edge of the 18 to the edge of the opposite six-yard line, putting it in the danger zone.
The difference between the Klopp Liverpool and the Liverpool teams of before that went before, it wasn't a lack of quality in terms of individual players, but they didn't have exactly what you just described. It was that intensity and doing the fundamental things really, really well. Liverpool have got one of the tightest shapes in the division, and it's just so efficient. But if you talk about, you know, West Ham team, for instance, which is the best of the rest comment, they don't necessarily have the quality and personnel to transcend into that elite level, but they play in that way. They are hassling. I was watching their European physical game the other night. Technically
Suchek
very good.
Suchek and Rice are physical as well. Remember when they played us a bit?
Villa under Smith at a stage last season were pressing tenaciously, but that's disappeared.
Really since sort of February 2021,
that
turn of the year period, and it's just sort of the
because that was meant to be the future, wasn't it? We're going to be like high pressing. That's why we signed Watkins, because he can actually do a one man press.
That is a puzzle. We have abandoned press, like, that.
Yeah, and that just disappeared out of nowhere. And you were thinking, well, Gerrard's probably going to have an element of that back, this kind of tenacity and not to give the opposition time in any area of the
and
pitch.
I think all that stuff, it links into something else we've discussed about the general match day atmosphere. I think when we've said it numerous times, one tackle can lift the crowd, or when you see a team getting pressed and pressed and pressed and pressed, and then you force the ball out for a throw-in or something, the crowd react well to the stuff like that, because they know that, right, we're actually up for the fight here.
I was going to say as well, one thing I think I haven't particularly seen is you sort of get a feeling, you know, when you think a goal's coming, you know, something's building over 10 or 15 minutes. I feel that a lot
pressure
with the opposition teams. but we've seemed to have lost that of late, and I wonder whether that's because of, I don't know.
I mean, it was almost like, I mean, you'll remember like under the sort of the O'Neill era, If Ashley Young would go down anywhere near the penalty area, especially out wide, you thought, right, we're going to put a good ball in the box. There's a fair chance one of Melberg or Larson or Dunn or Collins will get on the end of this. Gabby, Carew, etc. You know, we thought we're going to be a threat here. And that's not, you know, we could do a whole fucking podcast on Villa's set piece issues.
Don't start.
But it's this thing that you look at our players, you think, well, we clearly carry a threat.
And that's what I was thinking. One of the reasons I highlighted that Liverpool semi-final was just there is a certain pragmatism about what Liverpool do. And then you compare it to Villa with their bloody Nanny McPhee and all these stepovers and two players running into each other while taking a free kick, notes being passed on because nobody knows what they're doing. They're not playing the percentages, are they, Villa?
No, like just hitting an area with a good ball in. The few times we did it was when that was the Dina whipped corner and Buendia with a near post header. Just hit an area really well, flicked on, goal.
I mean, Graham Taylor, version one in his first reign. I remember, you know, his famous interview where he said,
Derek Mountfield,
just get it in the box was basically his mantra. You've got to cause the opposition problems. And when Liverpool played us that time and we were 1-0 up, that's what they were doing. It was like a diagonal bombardment of our box.
Yeah, and by doing the
percentages pay off. Yeah,
you make the opposition make decisions, and you also you start to make the referee make decisions. I can't remember how many times this year we've had penalties at Villa Park. Not very many. because we're not putting men in the box.
You've got to create that pressure to elicit the mistake from the defence, don't you?
Yeah. And like, there was always this thing, wasn't it, where, oh, you know, Man U always get so many penalties at Old Trafford. Like, yeah, but it's not a coincidence. They put men in the box.
Yeah.
And they pressure the opposition in there.
Don't worry, Sean Dyche will fix it.
Tarkowski coming up for corners.
Is that the note to finish on? Sean, don't worry, Sean Dyche will fix it.
Matthew Leighton on an emergency loan.
Apparently Tarkowski's available for free.
I just want to give a shout out to the new My Old Man Said patrons who have signed up in the last week or so. Daniel Carey, and annual membership wise, if you sign up annually, you do get 2 free months, which is around 15% off. So a big shout out to Jason Ward, Richard Saunders, Dan Wilson, and Sean Barnes. When you sign up to be a My Old Man Said patron, you get access to the Mom's Patron extra channel, where I've got a solo show on the FCG meeting, so watch out for that. That's incoming, and I've just put out part 3, quite funny actually, of the Mad Few sessions, which we recorded a couple of weeks ago, and we'll do a new one very soon. Also, you get access to Match Club, and we will be in Match Club for the Leicester City game, so if you are a patron already, please do join us there. Also, patrons, by the way, feel free, you're all on Twitter, retweet the show when the tweet comes out, and help spread the word. It's free, it helps. Right, there's nothing positive to say until we get on that field again.
So that's all there is. There isn't any more TV shows.
Positivity must come on the grass. Until then, it's goodbye from me, and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
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 Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.